before we get going on this week's podcast, I want to take a moment to tell you about something exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest California high school sports news, scores, videos, polls, photos, podcasts, player rankings, and much more. With the SB Live Sports app, it is now even easier to follow your favorite team with real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more. The app delivers all the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's your number one source for California high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Lance Smith, Bodie DeSilva, and me, Connor Morissette. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. I'm your host, Connor Morissette, alongside Lance Smith and Bodie DeSilva. Lance, we had a chance to go to Bellflower to watch Mater Dei win on the road against rival St. John Bosco 42-21. Going to get into that game. And Bodie, down in San Diego, you saw a fantastic game. Carlsbad coming from behind to beat Torrey Pines. So we have a lot to get to this week. Couple Thursday games we were at as well down in Orange County, Lance and I. So I want to hit on those. And then, of course, we'll look forward to this upcoming week. So, Lance, we'll start with you. How are you doing? And what were your main takeaways from that St. John Bosco defeat at the hands of Mater Dei? I have a few I'd like to get into, but is there anything you'd like to start with?
Well, I'm good. And I don't know if there's any one thing I necessarily want to start with. I thought, if anything, in the first half, they looked pretty darn evenly matched, regardless of the fact that it was a 21-21 score. And then, you know, if we're not going to get a close finish, at least we got one of the two teams winning it pretty assertively. So that was cool to see Mater Dei really just take control of the game. So I'm sure we'll break it down a lot more starting very shortly. So I'll start with that. And how are you today? I never asked.
I'm doing well, thank you. I agree. At first, those first few drives, it was like Mater Dei touchdown, St. John Bosco touchdown, and then I forget if they scored touchdowns on their second drives. It might have been punt, but what they were doing, they were just mirroring each other. But then halftime rolled around, and then everything changed, and so my big takeaway from that game was that at the end of it all, I saw a clear number one in Mater Dei and then a clear number two. And I'm seeing a lot of commentary this week now. Oh, well, look at 2019. Mater Dei won by two touchdowns. And they could certainly do that again and then St. John Bosco went on to win the championship. And then they could do that again. We've seen this before. And my argument would be that I think Mater Dei is in a better position this year than they were in 2019. And I really expect them to go on and win the whole thing once again, even with Servite in the mix. I just thought Mater Dei was so good, and I just want to start there. So the reason I don't buy that I think St. John Bosco can come back and win the championship like they did in 2019, because in that game, they just started slow in their regular season game. They were down 21-3 with a blink of an eye, but then they won the rest of the game after that 21-17, so they finished strong, and they even had some issues with turnovers. They had three turnovers in the red zone, so there were some fixable mistakes, and I wrote about this back in 2019. Mater Dei was the better team. They won the game, but St. John Bosco, they can still play. They're going to be a very tough out in the championship. This is not over, and not that it's over this year, but I thought St. John Bosco played really well. They didn't turn the ball over. They looked great in the first half. In the second half, they missed a couple of fourth downs, and so that was costly. But it wasn't like they were beating themselves. And the only time they really did that was with a bad punt in the second half that led to a short field for Mater Dei. I thought St. John Bosco played decently well, and Mater Dei was just better. The St. John Bosco secondary has so many great players, 8 Division I guys, but I thought Elijah Brown, Cooper Barkate, and CJ Williams, they were just better. And sometimes when you're just better, that's what happens. You score 3 touchdowns, and the other team scores 0 in the second half. So I see it a little bit differently than some people who say, oh, let's wait and see what happens in the championship. Of course, Bosco could win, but I was so impressed with Mater Dei. They don't make any mistakes. They haven't made any mistakes in big games since that championship in 2019. I've seen St. John Bosco make mistakes in big games way more often. And so when that second meeting comes around, unless there's some crazy injuries or something, I'm going to keep picking Mater Dei because I thought they really made a statement in that game on the road to win by 3 touchdowns. We'll get into the coaching adjustments they made at halftime. Those were brilliant. I really left that game thinking, okay, this team is number one. And of course, St. John Bosco is a close second, but there's a hierarchy right now. I don't think right now that you can group them as close together as maybe you could in years past. That was my big take.
Yeah, I totally agree. And another note from 2019 is that in that game, St. John Bosco didn't publicize it before the game or even after the game, but DJ Uiagalelei was playing on a pretty severely sprained ankle. And after the game, I remember Big Dave telling me he'd been getting treatment 3 times a week and that they were going to have him sit the next game. I think it was against SM, and I think he did sit it out. And then by the time the playoffs rolled around, he looked much better. So that was another thing. And there were some times in that 2019 regular season game where, you know, maybe it was a draw play and then DJ had an empty box that he could have run through or something along those lines, but he just didn't have that explosion or really even the agility he needed to leave the pocket and do something. And then when needed, he made those plays in the championship game. So that was another thing from 2019. Now, I think that's a good analysis from it. Like St. John Bosco, even though they played them so evenly in the first half, and it's not like they beat themselves in the second half, it's hard to look at, all right, how do they play so much better if Mater Dei doesn't beat themselves? And I remember when we were potting last week, you were insistent that St. John Bosco is going to need to find a way to make Mater Dei beat themselves in order to stay in this game if Mater Dei plays 2 good halves, and you ended up being right about that. You were totally right. So no, I agree, and I talked to Malachi Teo after the game, and I said, I'm sure it's not lost on you guys that the last 2 times we had postseasons, whoever won the regular season game lost, and he said he thinks a lot of it back then and now had to do with hunger, and that if anything, this is going to make Mater Dei even hungrier to prove it one more time in the playoff, because they know they can, and they know recent history, but they're not going to let it get to them. And I think that's a good way to look at it. So I agree. This widened the gap a little bit, even though it's not like St. John Bosco looked completely outclassed. They looked outclassed enough to where it's a little bit of a different dynamic going down the stretch now, as opposed to say 2019.
Certainly, and the coaching I thought was very good on the Mater Dei side. Not that it was bad on the St. John Bosco side, but the adjustment that Mater Dei made at halftime was very interesting. So remember, Lance, they had CJ Williams, the receiver, covering Mateo Uiagalelei for a couple plays in the first half. And then they took him out after Mateo caught one completion, and they were switching people around on him. And they had Quincy Craig on Chaden James, and they were just kind of getting shredded. And so what they did in the second half, they said, Quincy, you covered Mateo in the spring, and even though you let up a touchdown, you did a pretty decent job. Let's put you back on Mateo. Let's put our best healthy defensive back, Josh Hunter, on the biggest weakness that we're having right now, which is against Chaden James, and Hunter did a great job. They also brought in an extra safety to help with James, and Craig did a good job on Uiagalelei, and really, I think that was the difference in the second half. St. John Bosco, yes, could they still move the ball? They did have some success, and they were picking up first downs, but when they needed those fourth or third down and gotta have it, the Mater Dei defense tightened, and I think it had a lot to do with those adjustments. So that was something that really impressed me. And now that St. John Bosco knows what Mater Dei is going to do in that second meeting, I wonder, it's like a chess match, how they're going to respond. Are they going to try to do something different? And a few other things I wanted to hit on. We talked so much last week, Lance, about is there going to be a St. John Bosco receiver who has a big game and can really, you know, put himself up on this big stage? And Chaden James did that in the first half, but then in the second half, it was Cooper Barcade and then Jack Wrestler on the Mater Dei side. I know it's tough to criticize James, and that's not what I want to do, but I think for St. John Bosco to have won that game, we needed to look back on it and say, okay, those receivers played better than the modern day receivers. And the hierarchy, the ranking after that game, I thought CJ Williams was the best. And then number two, you had Cooper Barkate. Number three, you had Jaden James, which that was kind of how it was going into the game. Even though James had a good game, the other receivers around him, I don't think really did enough. You need an otherworldly performance to beat modern day, and they didn't get it from the receivers. So I gave them like partial credit here. I have on my notes they needed more, even though they did do pretty well. Modern day is just that good. And then St. John Bosco, they've been nervous about their special teams all year. That's what Coach Jason Inger has been talking about. Couple bad punts. They didn't elect to kick field goals when they had a chance to do that, and that's another way to lose games. So I'm nervous about their special teams going forward. And then the two quarterbacks, I don't love that either. I think that works against 99% of the teams in America. But once you go against a modern day or like an IMG Academy, you need one guy to get into a rhythm. Because I thought Elijah Brown got into that rhythm. And when you're switching every other time, I don't love that St. John Bosco does that in these big games. I wish they would stick with one, but I don't think they're going to do that. And we'll see if they continue to do that in the championship game if Servite doesn't have anything to say first. But if it is those two teams again, and it's the two quarterbacks, then I don't know. They're 0-2 with the two quarterbacks against modern day so far, and so and they both. It's not like these games have been particularly close. They've been multiple score games both times, and they've been close at times. But the final score is the final score. So though I wanted to end there, but Lance, please feel free to respond to any of that. I know I hit on like 4 points there.
Yeah, well, I don't think either of us had our opinions changed on the two quarterback platoon. Certainly not in this game, even though neither of them played bad. Neither of them took over. I thought this wasn't Pierce Clarkson's best game. Sometimes kid just has an off night. Not that he was awful, but we've definitely seen better from Pierce Clarkson, even relative to the competition. As for Cheeton James, I think he was so good in that second half, or in the first half. What I would have liked to see in the second half is, okay, now you have Josh Hunter, one of the defensive linchpins for modern day, and a second guy pretty much double-teaming James, borderline double-teaming James. Okay, to me, it's like at that point,
someone else has to step up. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Someone else has to step up and use the fact that he has two guys on him. So to me, James raised his stock for me. I was so impressed with the first half, both just how well he played and his sheer aggression in such a big situation. To me, that's where St. John Bosco probably will adjust if modern day does the same thing, should James come out strong next time they play, if they play again. And to me, they've got to find a way where, yeah, if James is driving two guys, either another receiver or running the ball more, whatever it is, that's the advantage that they have to either exploit, or at least they can't let that defensive adjustment take James out of the game, because he was really their life force in the first half.
Yeah, you put that way better than I did, Lance. You're right. If they put two guys on him, of course that'll take him out of the game. So what did modern day do when CJ Williams, after his hot start, they went to Cooper Barkate because Williams was covered. So after Jaden James gets covered, then where's Logan Buher? Where's Colin Chase, who had a big reception? Where's Mateo? Someone else needs to step up in that situation. And then I think, of course, the modern-day defensive line, maybe the quarterbacks didn't have enough time to get the ball to some of those receivers. But I think when St. John Bosco took away modern day's number one option, then Cooper Barkate had caught two touchdowns, and then Jack Ressler got into the end zone. So you saw the chess match play out in real time, whereas St. John Bosco, their number one option went away, they didn't score any points. And again, you just have to point to the scoreboard in a situation like that. The final thing I keep coming up with one other thing I want to talk about, so Bodie, we'll get to you in 1 second. The St. John Bosco running game, we talked so much in the spring how we thought Rayshon Luke was too involved. I didn't think the St. John Bosco running backs were involved enough in this game. Lance, it was interesting to me that they came out passing, and it worked at first, but then in the second half they just kept passing, and I didn't think they established the run the way modern day did. It's very difficult for both of these teams to run because the talented defenses, but modern day had an easier time running the ball in St. John Bosco, which on paper I thought those two units were somewhat even, and I was surprised that Rayshon Luke and even Jabari Bates, who's been a game breaker in big games for them, didn't see as much of the ball. That was something that surprised me. And I think in the rematch, if it comes in the championship game, then we'll see more Jabari Bates in Rayshon Luke.
I didn't really make that observation in real time, but now that you mention it, I agree. And I know Rayshon Luke had a couple good runs early that set up a couple of their early touchdowns. And now that you mention it, they could have gone back to him more, especially in that second half when they were playing the pass a little bit more. So that's a good point. And yeah, I mean, Jabari Bates has been so productive for them this year. I would have liked to see more of him as well. So that's a good point. One thing that was interesting was in the second half, Modern Day's pass rush got to Bosco a little bit more. I wasn't sure what the adjustment that led to that was. Maybe Bosco's offensive line just got a little tired or something. But there were more big hits, both in the pass rush and stuffing the run behind the line of scrimmage for Modern Day's front seven. So I didn't see exactly who were the individual instigators of that. I know Teo had a really good second half, but if I go watch the film, that's going to be one of the things I'm going to look at is what led to that improvement around the line of scrimmage for Modern Day, where it was kind of even in the first half, but Modern Day had a small but distinct advantage around the line of scrimmage in the second half.
I asked Rawlinson this, and thank goodness we could talk to the players, because Bruce Rawlinson does not give you much tactical analysis right after the game. And I said, what did you do differently on the defensive line? And he said, we did some different switches and stunts and stuff. So, like, they just rushed differently was his answer, which, hey, maybe that was the truth. But I was looking for something a little bit more in-depth. And maybe, Lance, if we watch some film, we can get to the bottom of that. But, Bodie, let's get to you now. Julian Sain. I mean, what else can you say about this sophomore quarterback for Carlsbad right now? He looks like not only one of the best quarterbacks in the section, but one of the best quarterbacks nationally, and he showed it in an incredible come-from-behind win against Torrey Pines. Fill us in about that game and what you saw there.
Yeah, that was an incredible game on Friday. Felt like I hadn't seen a good one in a while, so I was really happy to see that. I was not expecting it to be as high-scoring as it was. It ended up 34-33. I thought both teams had more of a better defense, and I thought they'd be more prepared. But Torrey Pines on the first snap of the game went 68 yards, and once Carlsbad got it back, they went 66 yards on their second snap. And from there on, it was just who could basically have the ball last. It was Torrey Pines 27-13 at halftime, and then neither team scored in the third. Carlsbad scored early on. They put together a good run there. Carlsbad, with 6 minutes left in the game, took a one-point lead. Field goals and extra points were a struggle for both teams throughout. Carlsbad ended up going for two late because of that to take the lead, and Torrey Pines missed a field goal there in the fourth quarter that would have put them up by two scores. But Torrey Pines, I know they're coming up on the losing side there, but I was really impressed offensively. They're a team that runs the wing T, and they scored four of their touchdowns there. Their last four touchdowns of the game through the air, and really impressive performance by their quarterback, Remy Barrett Jr. And all three of their running backs are juniors. So that's a really good sign. I think the spring season really helped those guys. And especially next year, that's an offense I'll be looking at there. But jumping into Julian Sain there, Carlsbad got the ball back down. It was 6 points, 5 points there with just, 72 seconds left in the game. On the touchback, they had to go 80 yards after Sain ran and got 15 yards tacked on in a face mask there. They came down the last play, 7 seconds from the 12-yard line, and they called timeout, drew it up, and he found a comeback to his top receiver, Josh Davis, in the corner of the end zone. And at that point, it kind of just felt like that was the way the game was going. You expect so much from him now, and he's got these experienced guys out wide that he can throw to. And the biggest thing I've seen with him now, the brief time we saw him during his freshman year backing up his quarterback during his older brother, who was the quarterback during the spring season, is just the accuracy. That's just something you don't see from 15, 16-year-old sophomore at this stage, and clearly why all those schools were able to extend their scholarship offers after he impressed in over the summer at those camps. So he's got Carlsbad sitting at 6-0. They are very much the top of the Avocado League, although Torrey Pines clearly can challenge them. And they should be able to go the remainder of the regular season here undefeated. They've gotten their two toughest opponents in league with Torrey Pines and Mission Hills out of the way. And not to say they'll cruise throughout the rest of these four games, but they're the big favorite in all of them. And I would expect them. They've now jumped up to the one seed the way the playoffs are working. I think it'll be a battle. Cathedral still could have an opportunity there, but those two to me are 1 and 2, and you got Lincoln at 3, though. Whether or not they make the open, that's up to the computer at this point. But Carlsbad, another impressive showing, and dating back now, they went through the spring season undefeated and haven't lost since the Open Championship in 2019. So they've really figured out something with this current group, and they're really rolling right now.
When you have a great quarterback at a public school like this, Bodie, and we've seen it in the Southern section. I remember in the spring, Malachi Nelson at Los Alamitos had a great spring. He was named the Gatorade Player of the Year. And then Nico Iamalieva had a great spring for Warren. And then it's no recruiting. It's no trying to get guys to play. It's the quarterback's play who attracts other guys who end up coming in. And it sounds like we've talked off the air. Carlsbad might have some graduating seniors at the skill positions. Saying to me, seems like a guy who just lets his play do the talking, and there might be some good receivers down in San Diego who want to team up with him because he's such a great quarterback. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, no, I mean, the looking at the guys he threw touchdown passes to the other night, whether it's Matt Moore, Josh Davis, Barrett Brennan, those guys are all seniors. They're running back Anthony Frehley, who's now doing double duty on defense and filling in at running back. Those guys are all seniors. So with two more years for Julian at Carlsbad, I would definitely think that's an attractive option to maybe some receivers that are trying to raise their stock, whether it's in San Diego or around Southern California, to team up there. And look, I hate diving into the whole recruiting part of it, yeah. But look, it happens, and kids want to pair up and find the combination that can show off their stock and hopefully get to reach the next level that way. So that would be something. Certainly, no knowledge of any names at this point, but I think a year from now we'll see how that works out.
And I want to finish with this right now. What's going on with that playoff format? Because it just looks like Lincoln is such a clear open division team, but right now they're number 5, and then Carlsbad, I don't want to say they're not number 1, but Cathedral Catholic is probably more deserving of number 1 just based on how things have gone so far this season. Is Lincoln really going to miss the open division? Do you think that is a possibility? And please provide some context as to a little bit more of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so I tend to think that the numbers will average out, but the way the advisory committee decided to go this year, they're using CIF's power ranking system, which awards you points based on if the team you play, whether you win or lose to them, whether their winning percentage is between 75 and 100, and then 50 to 74, and then 25 to 49, and then the lowest tier 0 to 24. So unfortunately for Lincoln's point of view, some of the teams that they're going to take on in the Western League, whether that's St. Augustine, La Jolla, Madison is having a good year. But with St. Augustine and La Jolla, those are two teams that maybe are underachieving or not because of injuries, have not had the record that everyone was kind of expecting before the season. I mean, I know La Jolla and St. Augustine were two teams that I had preseason top 10, and I believe both within the top 6 or 7 there. So look, injuries happen. Guys have smaller rosters, different things happen throughout the year. That's not a shock, but unfortunately for Lincoln, it's kind of cost them the possible points they can play when they were guaranteed and locked in to play those teams. So I'm hopeful that things will even out as we go along the way. And there is no differential with points or any of that. So a win's a win, whether it's by a point or by 50 points. So Lincoln will have the big opportunity in week 11 there. They will host Cathedral to end the regular season. If they win that game, I don't see any way that they're held out. Even if it's a thing where CIF has to manually adjust it, I don't know if they go in and say, look, it's clear that they are one of the top 4. We're moving them in. I don't know if that's the case or if they'd be allowed to do that, but it's pretty clear that Lincoln is a top 4 team. I have them at number 3. if you want to argue higher, I have no problem with that. Their only loss, they went up and lost by 4 points to Los Alamitos, which is clearly an impressive result for a San Diego team. So they'll have their chance against Cathedral here to finish, but really among those top four, seed them anyway. I mean, you can deal with the home field advantage. I have Cathedral at one, but they have two losses and Carlsbad's undefeated, so that's not a huge thing there. And I just hope we get these matchups on the field, because Cathedral Lincoln should be a really good one. And whether we get Carlsbad against one of those two and maybe a semifinal first round matchup, that would be super interesting as well.
Certainly. Let's finish with looking back to last week with this. Lance, please give me 30 seconds to a minute on Los Alamitos beating up on Corona Del Mar in Sunset League action, and then I'll briefly talk about Servite taking down Orange Lutheran. We were each at Orange County games on Thursday. So what'd you see from Los Al, Lance? That offense, I know they've struggled at times, but they looked pretty good last week.
Yeah, I thought that game went about as I expected. Corona Del Mar, they didn't look like a bad team at all, honestly. They even had some bright spots, David Razor in some points, wide receiver John Tipton, Charlie Mannon, linebacker, had some nice sacks and tackles for loss. But they just ran into a better team. Los Al didn't look like the team that had that ugly second half against Santa Margarita, their previous game. They just looked a little bit more regrouped and collected, and not a whole lot of new takeaways for Los Al. I mean, we know what all those guys do, all the five-star Oklahoma commits now that they have a trio of them. The one guy who I would say emerged, the two times I've seen them, has kind of emerged as their secret weapon. I'll say two guys. One of them would be Gavin Porch, a two-way guy, really high three-star ranking for a guy who doesn't have any offers yet, can run the ball, had a fantastic running touchdown in that game, very good slot receiver. And then he's also at free safety. His closing speed is so impressive. He had a really good chase down tackle that would eventually save a touchdown when Ethan O'Connor intercepted the Sea Kings in the end zone. And then the other guy who's impressed me both times I've seen them is Isaiah Dorsey, another undersized safety who plays a lot bigger than he is and can contribute occasionally on the offensive side of the ball. But just looked like Los Al, just being the exact Los Al team that we've expected. Not dominant in the trenches, but certainly good enough to give their playmakers room to roll. And I see Los Al, I'm sure we'll talk about the Edison game. That I think that's going to be a great one, and I'll give Edison a chance for sure. But it just looked like Los Al doing what we've expected them to do all season.
Certainly. Yeah, we'll talk about that game momentarily. So the Servite Orange Lutheran game, 56-12 win for the Friars. Noah Fafita in front of his future college coach, Jed Fish. Just unbelievable. Threw five touchdowns. What else can you say? The game was over like in the snap of a finger. Servite scored. And then Orange Lutheran, of course, fumbled the kickoff. Servite scores again. And then when it's 14-0, you're already done. It was 28-0 at the end of the first quarter. Tetroa McMillan had that fantastic one-handed interception. If you haven't seen that, check it out. And that's his secondary position. He's a receiver. He caught four touchdowns in the game, three from Fafita. And just one thing that struck me watching, like, Orange Lutheran, for some reason, would just put one cornerback on McMillan, and they didn't adjust. And it was just like, I know Servite has some other good players, and you got to worry about everyone, but, like, why are you doing that? Why wouldn't you at least put a safety or maybe just two cornerbacks on him just to try to slow him down? Like, he was killing them, and other guys had good games as well, but McMillan was just repeatedly killing them. And if I went up against Servite, I think I'd try to have two guys on McMillan, and I'd just say, look, I'm probably going to lose. You're one of the best teams in the country, but I'm not going to lose without trying to limit your number one option. Like, if you beat me, I want you to beat me with your 2, 3, or 4 option. And so I was just a little bit surprised with how Orange Lutheran defensively approached that game. And then Servite's defense is underrated. I'm so excited for the St. John Bosco Servite game. It's the week after the Modern Day game. I expect Modern Day to beat Servite, but I think Servite could certainly beat St. John Bosco. So we'll see. It's I do feel bad for Servite. They go on the road, which for them, it's like a home game, but you know, they're not the home team against Modern Day. And then they finish on the road against St. John Bosco in back-to-back weeks. So that's tough, but they should be one of those, or they will be one of those top eight teams. So they'll get a bye or a week off to prep before the playoffs start. So hopefully they can be all healthy and ready to go, but playing those two teams back-to-back is very tough. Okay, Bodie, where are you going to be at this week? Have you decided yet? I know it was a little bit up in the air. Let's now look ahead to the games we're going to be at this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm locked in yet. There's a couple games I'm looking at. I know San Diego High is traveling out on the island there to play Coronado. And this is, I think a kind of underrated game. San Diego High is 6-1. Coronado's 5-1. And this will be a battle in the City League. So that's definitely one of the ones I'm considering. And then another one, Madison, who's had a good start. They did lose to Cathedral Catholic last week in their league opener. But that's, look, until someone from San Diego can prove they can play with Cathedral, that's not really a surprise. Madison will be playing at St. Augustine, which is super close for them because St. Augustine doesn't play on campus. They play at Mesa College, and that's right next to Madison there. So this is a game I'm looking at. There's, I think, 6 or 7 Division I kids total in this game. So maybe two teams that aren't in my top 10 right now, but I think would be dangerous. They'll both be locked into the Division I playoffs, and whether or not one of them can maybe grab a first round bye, I think that would be a good one there. So haven't locked it in for sure. Just trying to make sure whatever game I do attend that all the players are healthy. I want to make sure I try and get to another good game this week.
Certainly. When you go to Coronado, is there a bridge? Do the players have to take a boat? How does that work?
Yeah, so there's the Coronado Bridge right downtown by Petco Park, and it's typically 2 lanes each side, so you can get some traffic different times of the day, whether people that live on Coronado or people that work on Coronado, but it's a fun trip down there across, and there is a ferry. I don't think that's the route San Diego High would take, although that would be a fun trip. They could head downtown from their campus there and take the ferry across as a team. That would be a good idea for maybe Coach James will have his guys do that this year.
Maybe some team bonding. That's fine.
Yeah.
The two games I'm looking at Thursday for sure, Edison at Los Alamitos. Lance, you touched on it briefly. Even though it's not a David versus Goliath matchup, that's kind of how I see it. Just because Edison and both of these teams are in the California top 25, so they're two of the best teams in the state. But Los Alamitos has the Oklahoma trio and so much talent. And then Edison, it's like their best player is Nico Brown. And for some reason, I don't understand, he's struggling to get like big time offers when every week he just comes out and makes these ridiculous catches. And after that, they just have a lot of really good high school football players. So that's kind of how I see the matchup. And then I thought it was just funny, like the Goliath, Malachi Nelson, the Oklahoma commit, and then you got David Parker Awad, who tried his luck at Modern Day, didn't end up working out, and transferred to Edison, is now having a great time. But just to see the dichotomy of the team, you're getting a lot of really good high school football players against some guys on Los Alamitos who have plans to play on Sundays and certainly Saturdays before that. So kudos to Edison for us even talking about this game and being in it. I think they certainly have a shot. I thought Los Al has underachieved at times this year, but I mean, I can't pick Edison. Los Al has so much talent, you have to pick them. So that's what I'm going to do. But if Edison wins, A, fantastic win for them. B, Los Al, I'll be shaking my head because this is the game you got to win if you're Los Alamitos. That's how I see it, Lance. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, we could spend time breaking down the matchups, but I like how you put it. Edison is a really good high school football team. Like, it's a bunch of guys who are talented. They'll definitely have some D2, lower D1 guys on that team, and a few mid-major guys, but it's really David versus Goliath, even though when you look between the lines a little bit, Edison's depth is good. They're bigger than people realize. They're faster than people realize. They're so cohesive as a unit, and that's a way where, in my limited experience seeing these teams, I think they actually have a bit of an advantage. I think they'll give Los Al a little bit more trouble in the trenches on both sides than people think. And I think if these two teams play 10 times, for all the top-end talent that Los Al has, I don't think Los Al probably wins more than 7 or 8 of those. So I'm saying Edison definitely beats these guys a couple times out of 10. So I wouldn't quite say David versus Goliath in terms of the odds I'm giving them, but in terms of how you look at them as programs, yes, exactly. But for Edison, I mean, for all the senior talent they had in the spring, It's impressive that they really haven't had a drop off. I thought that, I mean, I slept on them so much coming into the spring season. This season, I haven't slept on them at all, and I'm glad I haven't, because for whatever reason, with all the senior talent they have, they're pretty much just as good. But it'll be a tall order for them. I think they can do it. If I were forced to pick, I would take LoSalle, of course. But man, that should be one of the better OC games of the season, or just Southern Section games of the whole regular season, if Edison brings their best.
I agree. The other game I'm going to this weekend, Friday, Sarah's going to host Chaminade. Sarah will hopefully have quarterback Malik Murphy, who's committed to Texas, back, as well as Roderick Pleasant, who is a great defensive back in the class of 2023. I think Chaminade's going to win, but just Sarah, they're 2-3. They've been hit with injuries and COVID. This is a big game for them to make a statement and maybe pick up a win. Like I don't want to say it's a must-win for them, but if they have championship aspirations in Division II, this is a game you got to win. I'm picking Chaminade, but I want to see something from Sarah. That's my my breakdown this week. Lance, where will you be? Take us home.
Well, on Thursday, so I don't know where I'm going to be Friday. For Thursday, I'm going to be at Santa Margarita versus Servite. I would love to concoct an argument on why Santa Margarita has a chance in this game. They're so good, but I can't. The main reason being that Servite won this, I think it was 42-14, last game of the regular season in the spring season. And in that game, Servite was missing T-Mac and Kian Burnett on both sides of the ball. So that, and Servite still rolled them, and they did it a lot with their run game. So I would love to say that I think Santa Margarita can give them a run for their money. I mean, at this point, Servite's a clear top 10 team in the country, so I'm just not going to try to make that argument, and that's not a knock on SM. I will say this, though. SM showed what they can do against incredible talent in the passing game when they beat LoSalle and finished the game on, I think, a 42-8 run and held them to one score in the second half. So what I saw in that game from their secondary was so impressive that it's not like I don't think that they can contain Servite better than it seems on paper that they should or shouldn't be able to. So I just want to see what kind of edge they try to go to this time. Like what are they going to do new this season that they didn't do in the spring? But I hope it's a good game. And if not, you know, You want to see SM still look good, even if it comes in a losing effort. Like, just if it doesn't end up being a close game, you want to see them bring an effort that they can still be proud of and just move on, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. They've slowed down one great passing attack in Los Alamitos, and even though Servite is probably on another level, although the skill position guys are even if you look at it, but Servite clearly is on another level offensively. They'll be confident in the fact that they've slowed down one passing attack. So I like that point a lot, Lance. I thought that was smart.
Awesome. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for me.
Great. I agree, though. You can't pick against Servite right now, and especially after that big 56-12 Orange Lutheran win. I thought Olu would play him closer. Santa Margarita is probably a little better than Orange Lutheran, but right now, man, it is Servite just too much. Well, thanks, guys, for joining me. This has been the SB Live California podcast. For Lance Smith and Bodie DeSilva, I'm Connor Morissette. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.